My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey, hey,
hey.
Hey, hey,
hey,
hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Sal Capaccio has been very kind over the years to reach out to me, and maybe you as well, Bulldog, when he might have a fantasy question. And I would like to return the favor with a question that is making my head hurt, Sal, if you're ready.
I'm ready. You rock and roll. I'm guessing it might have to do James Cook, but I have no idea.
Josh Allen or Geno Smith this week?
Ooh, I mean, I don't think you ever can rest bench Josh Allen in a fantasy game. I don't care if you think he has a terrible matchup and the other person has the best matchup in the league. He's Josh Allen, and he can run for two touchdowns in any given game.
Okay. That's what I tell people, too. Well, so a form of that is, how will you feel if Allen blasts off and has one of his classic performances and you benched him for Geno Smith against the Niners? Like, not great.
Yeah, this is very different than, like, say, benching Kyle Pitts last week.
Very different because
you're tired of the low numbers or even the zeros, and then he gets 15. You're like, okay, well, good. I guess he can go back in now. He got the message. I'm speaking from experience. We did bench him last week.
Pitts is so going 2-for-19 this week.
Right, sure. But yeah, Allen is different. And they both have pretty tough matchups. I mean, I know the 49ers don't look like the 49ers record-wise at 2-3, but, I mean, that's a team that's, I don't know how Geno Smith has done against San Francisco. I know Josh Allen's done against the Jets, and that's been a tough road. I just don't think either, I don't see an advantageous matchup on either side there.
All right.
And I think, yeah, you can live with it. If you bench Allen and he goes off, yeah, that's tough to take. If you play Geno, and if you bench Geno, I mean, and he goes off, I think that's easier to live with and go, yeah, but I got Josh Allen, come on, right? I mean, like, I think you can, it's a little more forgiving to yourself.
You want to, last thing, you want to not, I think, you know, obsess about or even care about the fact that it's 3 days of looking at your lineup. If you get this quote wrong tonight, like, it really shouldn't matter when the games are played, but there is something about that, you know, goose egg or whatever staring back at you, especially if you're me and you're just constantly obsessing over these things just for 3 days, all the way to Sunday night football or Monday night, 4 days,
right?
Monday night football, even, like, oh, why did I do it? If like Sal's scenario, Geno Smith has a 25-point game or something like that, hey, you're still live. You've got, you know, Allen on Monday, but it is, how about it, Sal? Like,
right.
the overall point obviously is he's not putting the numbers up. Look at that from any perspective, and it looks different this year. Do you generally think that that's going to bounce back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be like these overwhelming numbers, but I do. I think that the last 2 weeks just haven't been good numbers, but I think then overall should be. The last 2 weeks are some of the worst, like, fantasy performances of his career, I think, to be quite honest, right? If I know. So I think it has to bounce back. I don't know if you'll quite get the ceiling where we've been used to for the overall numbers, but I would think you'd have to have, again, look at the Arizona game week one. It wasn't great, and then all of a sudden, bam, two touchdowns, right? So I think if you're talking fantasy-wise, yes. If you're talking just percentage-wise, passing, those numbers, I don't know what the expectation should be. I think it certainly should be better than it was last week, but maybe not as high end as it was the Monday night against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
While we're on him, has there been any visual evidence to the changing the left hand? I thought I saw reference to during the game on Sunday that he didn't have the two fingers taped together. Do you know if there's been any?
Correct.
Okay, so he still had the glove, but the fingers weren't taped together any longer.
That's correct. That was the change on Sunday. Okay. And it's remained so far in practice this week where he's wearing the glove, but the fingers aren't taped. Last week, he had the finger. He did not have the fingers taped. Oh, so 2 weeks ago, if I remember right, he still had them taped during the game against mm-hmm. Ravens. And then this Sunday, nothing at all. I'm trying to remember the timeline, but I think that was a change over the last week or so, yes.
Right. Okay. So maybe that's improving, but not enough to take the glove right. off. I don't know. Maybe he'll just leave the glove on all the time. I don't. Who knows? Maybe he likes
yeah,
it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, and listen, this isn't like so this glove. Like, I mean, I don't have the glove in my hand to tell you, but it appears to me when I take a picture of it or look at it, it might have a little extra padding on
right.
it too, right? It's not
right.
just a glove. It's got, you know, you're protecting the hand a little bit. So it would make sense that, hey, you know what? It feels good where I can kind of move everything. But let's just kind of be precautionary so we don't re-injure it, you know, while we're running or so you're banging on someone's helmet or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense. Maybe that you play the longer game with that side of it.
Do you have any sort of additional analysis to like Allen versus the Jets? I mean, the numbers aren't great. He had one pretty big game there a few years ago, but that's kind of it. I mean, obviously the Jets have some famous good defensive players, but is there a scheme thing or is there something more to it?
I don't know. I think scheme probably plays a little bit into it. I think a lot of times, you know, the scheme can be everybody, though. It seems like the Bills overall have kind of struggled a little bit against whatever the Jets do. I know typically a lot of times the Jets run a 3-4 and, you know, they come from different places. It's not something you see a lot in the league. You do see them twice a year, so you'd think you'd be a little more used to it. They have good players, too, right? They certainly have good players. Now, look, remember last year, Ken Dorsey gets fired after the Monday night game, and the Bills go and play the Jets literally six days later, and Josh Allen goes 275 and three touchdowns against the Jets. They scored 32 points. So he's had these games against them. I'm looking at his game logs now. He had 70% completion percentage in that Monday night game, but he just made bad decisions. He threw three interceptions, and he should have ran the ball. But overall, like, he was actually completing some passes. His completion percentage has not been that great against them. They're typically taking away and making it a little bit more frustrating on him. Mike, I don't think it's necessary. I do think it's part of its scheme. But look, I mean, you have scheme with good coach. This defense gives everybody fits. They've been one of the top defenses in the league
right.
over the last few years. So it's not like it's just Josh Allen that they're doing this to. And they have good players. And I think some of the things they do have been really kind of just matchup-wise a little bit tough for the Buffalo Bills.
I had been hopeful, you know, not nothing against the guy, but just for the Bills' sake here, that Sauce Gardner, who left the game against Minnesota mm-hmm. on Sunday, could be, you know, limited or just, you know, maybe even unavailable this week. He's not even on the injury report. I just finally saw it now. They've got, I think their nickel corner maybe, Michael Carter, didn't practice. Left tackle, Tyron Smith had a vet rest day, and then some guys limited. Morgan Moses, the right tackle. C.J. Mosley, linebacker. Rodgers is on that list, but no Sauce Gardner. So he has no designation at all. I assume he's just a full go, so they'll have their two studs on the outside.
Yeah, for sure. And you wonder, how do they play him? I mean, there's not somebody he has to travel with, right? So he probably stays on one side. They could do something like that. Remember last year, that Khalil Shakir long touchdown, and Sauce kind of got beat on that. There was a bunch of stuff on social media, him saying he wasn't beat on it or whatever, but there was that long touchdown. He was right in the vicinity of that. And on the other side for the Bills, you know, obviously with Khalil Shakir's situation, which we can talk about, you know, that could, you know, change and alter the dynamic of how they want to attack or what the Jets defense wants to do, because so far he's really been the only wide receiver on the Bills that's put up any kind of numbers.
Well, let's get to the injuries. Shakir still a DNP, and James Cook too. Any read on where we think this is headed? The game isn't until Monday. I'm not sure how much we could possibly know right now.
You're right. It's tough right now. So if you want to get just my read on how these things normally go, you know, James Cook 2 days in a row, really not doing much. In fact, you know, he's still working a little bit off to the side with trainers, but it just seems like this could take a little bit. And I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow. I'll have Sean on the Extra Point Show It is a Friday before a Monday game, so he won't say exactly like the injury designation status for everyone for the game. That doesn't come out till Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills were without James Cook on Monday night. Khalil Shakir is interesting to me. He did more today than he did yesterday. I have some video you can watch. He actually was on the field. Mike White was actually throwing him some passes as he kind of worked right next to a trainer doing some get-off stuff with his feet and, you know, kind of some explosion stuff. So I wonder if he's getting a little bit closer and if that's going to be, you know, something that, you know, it was until Friday last week where he wasn't even declared out. My Sean came on the radio show and said he wouldn't be playing. I wonder if maybe that's more of something that goes through the weekend and we find out about him a little bit. So to me, you got more of a chance the way I see it or for Khalil Shakir to possibly play than James Cook. It wouldn't surprise me either way if neither of them plays.
And the news is still good on Taron Johnson. I see limited, but he was out of the red non-contact, right?
Yeah, better news, in fact, being out of the red non-contact. Remember yesterday I said he was doing actually more stuff with his arm. He was actually hitting a bag a little bit. So great news that he's out of the red non-contact. So is Terrell Bernard. He was in one, so he's out of that. And again, sometimes that's just, you know, you get it first practice after a game, want to make sure the body's feeling right. So maybe it's just more precautionary than anything. Obviously, with Taylor Rapp being cleared from concussion protocol, not necessarily anything that you have to be worried about. But a lot of times you get back at practice, you just want to make sure guys get through things. So he practiced. And then positive news for Curtis Samuel, he actually practiced today. He was limited. Remember, he didn't practice at all yesterday. Right. So he was limited and out there. So at least he's trending in the right direction.
What would you predict the Bills do in the backfield if no Cook?
It's a good question. I would predict that you'd get pretty good split carry share between Ty Johnson and Ray Davis in some capacity. In a situation like this, you got prime time, division game, you know, tough environment. I would not be surprised if Ty Johnson gets the nod over Ray Davis just to kind of start the game, get the flow going. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is one of those situations where I'll be the first to tell you I think it's totally overblown that like the Bills and Sean McDermott don't play rookies. But I do think situation matters of when they play rookies, how often, or deferring to a veteran, right? And I think this would be maybe a situation, maybe even a home 1 p.m. game, maybe a lean a little bit more on the rookie and say, yeah, he'll be fine. I think in an environment like this, under the lights, prime time, in New York, maybe you lean on the veteran a little bit more. That wouldn't surprise me.
Right.
And I would guess they'd both kind of get some time.
Yeah, and maybe they'll elevate Darrington Evans. His practice window just opened. Maybe that would be a little fast, but he did practice in full here today. And they also have Frank Gore Jr. down there on the practice squad, right?
Yes. The only thing about Darrington Evans is you couldn't elevate him. If he has to come off IR, they got to make a roster move.
I see.
Someone's got to get released.
Gotcha.
Because he's on IR.
Right.
What they could do is release him and then, hey, he has to go through waivers and then resign him. But I don't even think the timing on that would work. So that's a bit tricky there. Yeah, you could do it, Bulldog. If you're going to elevate someone, that would be the Frank Gore Jr. situation there.
Right.
Because he's on the practice squad and you could just elevate him.
Right. What have you thought of Davis so far?
I like Davis. I've liked him. I think that he runs hard. You know, his first couple carries, first game, like the first game when it was a little rough for him, I thought he's really kind of gotten into it a little bit better, though. You know, he looked a lot better starting with week two. I like what he's done so far in certain situations. What I really like is his pass blocking, picking up blitzes. He's done a really nice job. That's a tough deal for rookies to kind of learn. You know, but he's a rookie, but he played like 5 years of college football. He's a little bit older. You know, I think he's a little bit more experienced than most rookies and understands those concepts. He played, you know, what helps him. And, you know, we talk about like guys going to different colleges, and I hate it as much as a lot of people do. He played with three different colleges, but what that does actually exposes you to a lot of different systems and learning how to do things different ways. So you're a little bit more prepared to do that when you get into the NFL and they're asking you, you know, to do something some way. You might say, oh, you know what? I did that when I was at Kentucky, or I did that when I was at Temple. Mm-hmm. You know, you have three different schools to choose from here. I like him. I think he's going to be a good player for the Bills. I think that they're starting to use him a little bit more in that power role that we thought they would. But at the same time, I think they're trusting him a little bit more to be kind of just an all-around number two guy.
Still pretty disappointing to see a DNP for Ed Oliver again here today,
yeah.
Sal. But on the bright side, I know I mentioned Dwayne Carter last week because he celebrated a good play, but you know the Bills were pretty far behind and it just rankled me a little bit. So enough to mention it. I liked him a lot on Sunday in Houston.
Yeah. He was really good. Somebody was telling me how undersized he was a couple of weeks ago. So I looked it up and said, you know, he's a little shorter than what you want. He's 6 foot. I think you want your, are you 6'2", right? I think he's 6'2", yeah. I'm sorry. I think you want your D tackles to be a little bit taller than that. I think at Oliver 6 foot. But he's not really undersized for today's NFL. He's over 300 pounds. And a lot of these guys are a little bit smaller. You know, I looked at some rosters around the league because when someone's mentioned, I said, you know, I wonder what the average guy is. A lot of D tackles now are right about him. He's kind of average size. Again, not as much the height. You might want a little bit taller there. But teams really only have one or two guys that are 325 plus these days. Like, you might have one or two. Daquan Jones is for the Bills. A lot of the guys, though, are penetrating, smaller, athletic guys. Mm-hmm. And look, what he did in that first play of the game was a super athletic play, right? I mean, he diagnoses the screen, and then he just jumps on it right away. After the game, I said, hey, you know, what did you see on that? And he it was a really good answer. He went back to the week before, and he said, you know, he didn't recognize quick enough. He worked all week on making sure he was recognizing film study. And as soon as he felt it, he recognized it and he went right to it. That's great. I love hearing that from guys. They're learning from their mistakes. He seems like he's a high IQ guy. We know that. His dad played in the NFL. He got a lot of bloodlines there. He played. He was a 3-time captain at Duke. Like, he's a leader. This is a guy that's going to study football and he's going to want to get better every week. And I thought you saw that last week. I agree with you. He was making some plays out there. And if Ed Oliver doesn't play, in fact, Josh Reed and I were talking about this today. Like, if Ed Oliver doesn't play, yeah, sure, it's a loss. But if that kid can play like that, it's not nearly the kind of loss it could be.
It really buffers it. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jets made the coaching change this week. And today, the interim coach, Jeff Ulbrich, said he's changing play callers on offense mm-hmm. to Todd Downing from Nate Hackett. I don't know if you have a specific thought on Downing. I really don't. I know in Tennessee, I think it was, he didn't really do great. I think it was Tennessee. But just the idea of making that move, you know, midweek, midseason. I mean, the head coaching change, it doesn't have to be so, you know, in terms of the granular side of it, maybe so meaningful. I think there's definitely a feeling that this would be different. But play calling and, you know, setting up the game plan, everything that the offensive coordinator will do. I'm not sure they're calling him that. Still, it's a big change. What do you think, in general, a team's chances are of pulling that off successfully?
Well, it's interesting. Again, go back to last year. The Bills were great at it the following week, right? I mean, they changed Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady, and they scored 32 points in 6 days later, which was wild, against the Jets defense. I think it can give a team a shot in the arm. It's a new way to look at things, a new perspective. I do think, you know, if you have a guy sitting there in the booth or on the sidelines and he's watching the game and he's taking this all in, he's not calling plays, a lot of times it gives him perspective on, you're thinking, okay, I would do this here, I would do that there. And you have a real, you know, fresh set, like I said, of eyes and thoughts. And sometimes as a play caller, I think you can just get a little bit too, you know, kind of status quo. Like, these are the things that we know that work, and you get into it. So it opens. I think it opens up a little, some creativity here for the Jets to be ready for anything. And, you know, obviously they could start, but the system won't change. The system's not going to change in that close of a time period. I asked Joe Brady about this very thing in the offseason when he took over for Ken Dorsey. How about the system changing? And look, you don't have Ken Dorsey's system necessarily. And he said, no, you can't do that. He said, what you really do is, though, you go to Josh, and in this case it'll be Aaron Rodgers. You know, what do you like to do? What do you think we're good at? Let's try to pare these things down to that, and then we'll kind of expand from there on maybe what we can do off of that. So I think that's what they're probably working through this week, Mike, which is they're probably getting in together with Aaron Rodgers especially, but, you know, guys on the offense, and saying, what have you liked and what haven't you liked about the flow of the game and the play calling and what we're doing and what we're not doing, and you go from there. And a lot of times, too, the play calling, I think too much is made of the actual play call in football. I think it's the execution that matters, right? I mean, lots of plays are called that really are great play calls, but somebody just doesn't do it right. But a lot of time, the operation really matters. It's getting the call in on time, getting out of the huddle, getting your quarterback up to the line in time. All this stuff about the cadence. Remember that a couple weeks ago with yep. Rodgers mm-hmm. and the cadence? Like, those are the kinds of things that I think can matter here, what they do there.
Before you go, as a Yankees fan, what are your thoughts on the Mets?
They're super exciting. They're fun to watch. I have a friend that is a very high level, works high level in the Mets organization. I'm super happy for him. I am very worried. I do not want them to go farther than the Yankees, because that's tough to deal with as a Yankee fan. So it's fun in games and great until they finally lose. And I say, okay, at least the Yankees, you know, are better. Now, if the Yankees happen to get eliminated, it's a tough one for me, because I don't want to see the Mets win a World Series now before the Yankees, but I would be absolutely thrilled for my friend who works for them and others who I know are big Mets fans.
You think it's generally right that Mets fan hates the Yankees, but Yankees fan doesn't really hate the Mets?
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Little brother.
Yeah, that's
or yeah, something. That kind of thing, right?
Pities
but look,
them.
I think the Mets are getting, like, they're getting a lot of buzz now. They're a fun team to watch. The energy at that place is great. They have this really rich owner, so.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
I do think some Yankee fans are now starting to feel a little bit more like the other way.
A listener told me today, by the way, that their hitting director, the Mets, lives in Rochester, Jeff Albert.
Oh, I did not know that.
He said his son had done clinics from him in the Rochester area. So,
well, there's that too. I just hope the Yankees win tonight with Cole on the mound because you need to close this out. If they go to Yankee Stadium for Game 5, anything can happen. I don't want that to happen. So just close this thing out tonight.
Very good.
You got a nice one from Stanton last night there, buddy.
Let me just say real quickly, guys. I've said this a couple times today on with both the other shows. I am the number one guy over the last few years who just gets so frustrated at Giancarlo Stanton not getting a big hit in a big situation, and I just kind of take it all back. He got a big hit in a big situation. Did you see the stat? He is second in baseball history behind Babe Ruth for the best at-bat to home run ratio in the postseason. Yep. That's incredible.
Who was this? Babe Ruth? Who was this?
Stanton.
Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah. Didn't he drive in a run earlier in the game? And did I read he had a stolen base?
He did.
Well, How did that happen? I watched him try to run to from first to third the other day. And I needed a sundial to time it.
Bulldog, he was the only guy on base, and they were not holding him on. Like, they're not holding him on. I think there was only one out, too, if I remember. So he literally walked off the base. He just kept walking, and by the time he got to a certain spot, the pitcher starts his strategy. Bam, I'll see you. I'll take off.
I'm looking at this Babe Ruth you mentioned. Holy cow, his reference page. Wow, this guy was good.
He goes by a couple names, too, just so you know.
He led the American League. Oh, is Babe Ruth going to have the nickname that we've never heard? I doubt it. Is that actually going to apply here? No nicknames. Maybe baseball's above it. I don't see any.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Sal. We'll talk tomorrow.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That's our man, Sal Capaccio, on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Wait. You had to scroll down. Jidge?
I don't know what that is. I know the Bambino.
The Bambino, the Sultan of SWAT.
Sultan of SWAT, sure.
The King of Crash? The Colossus of Clout?
Wow.
Jidge.
Jidge.
I hope I'm not swearing by saying that. That's just what it says here. It's right?
J-I-D-G-E.
Anyway, it's out there.
Yeah, okay.
It's out there. All right. Putting it back out there. I just wanted to learn a little bit more about this Babe Ruth that Sal mentioned.
You know, he used to pitch.
Oh, there's no way. That's not true. 803-0550. I did a bad job yesterday by saying I wanted to bring a new wide receiver name into the conversation, then never did. So this time, I promise. Lines are open. Sabres and Kings tonight, the home opener. Pregame at 6. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
It really dawned on me at one point just how rough this outside wide receiver situation is when I see Matt Collins mess up on a route on third down and then immediately the Bills are punting the ball. And do you know who's the gunner going down to try to tackle the punt returner? It's Matt Collins.
Matt Collins, yeah.
The dude they just threw the ball to on third down. With where Keon Coleman is right now as an NFL player that they are only throwing out as an outside receiver and like just being a jump ball dude, they're just kind of drawn dead from the outside receiver position right now.
Matt Harmon is a guy who knows things. Drawing dead.
That's not, that doesn't sound very encouraging.
No.
Yeah, drawing dead. I don't want to be described as doing that.
Whoever your gunner is need not be your third down target. Seems right.
Yeah. I don't want to repeat my Mac Hollins. I just can't. I still can't believe it. I can believe it. It's just.
No, I think you're right. I can't believe it.
It's stunning to me that they planned to do this, and that they're actually doing it. I just can't believe it. I didn't want to believe it all summer. I've been saying all week, Sal, I'm telling you, he's going to be on the field a lot. Like, no, come on. He's going to be a gunner. They're going to replace
that part
Diggs.
Is right.
Yeah, well, right. The part about him being a gunner is right.
Here is a theory. Here's a new theory for me. So, as we've said many, many times, Diggs gets traded. Samuel is signed. But still, Diggs gets traded. Davis leaves. And a lot of us... people who have called in, you and I, were kind of thinking, okay, there will be another move here. This is before the draft,
mm-hmm.
and they did draft Keon Coleman. But even with that, because he's a rookie and that's going to take time probably, there will be another move. So this is where we really don't know what anything about what Bean does. What effort was made? Brandon Ayuk, right? That was the hot one. Just different... possibilities, big free agent or a trade, what's coming? Something's got to be coming. What's coming? In the end being like by week one, nothing. It is Mac Hollins and Samuel playing a small role and Coleman also playing a small role. They did it. And by that I mean they didn't do it. They didn't do the other thing. What if the thinking was, and we again, I said before, we just don't know how Bean was inclined here, and how close he might have been. He might have even thought he was getting someone
mm-hmm. yep.
like this that would have satisfied us. Let's get into the season. Back burner, we've still got an idea. Maybe that was Adams. Maybe that was someone else. And instead of my read on it, which has been, look, this was their big plan, and they were going to go through this year without that obvious number one receiver. How do you double back on it so early? They are 3-2, et cetera, et cetera. Like that they wouldn't. The question in my mind was, would they take their struggles of late and have that be enough to mean, all right, new plan. Maybe going out at the deadline and getting somebody established, even a star at that position, actually is the plan. And I don't know that you can really have full control over that.
Right.
But we just don't know what the GM does.
That's right. Yeah.
And it might be, I don't mean to get your hopes up, but it might be the case that yep. the plan all along mm-hmm. was, if we're not perfect, if it doesn't really hum all the way around, we are going to make that move by whatever it is, week 8.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable. Sal and I talked about that last Wednesday, I think. Like, because, you know, how hard would it be from an appearances standpoint? We've touched on this too. Like, they make a move for Adams or even Amari Cooper or anyone else. We got to get who you're thinking of too, by the way. Let's yes. make sure we don't run away from that for a second straight day. They might have wanted to do something. Brandon Bean might have been right in line with what a lot of us were thinking, which is, I traded Stephon Diggs. Okay, here we go. Right here comes the other shoe. How big a shoe is it? Right? Was the phrasing I used. Is it a big construction worker boot or a tiny little high heel? I don't know. But maybe prices just weren't there. San Francisco did not trade Brandon Ayuk. There even wasn't any trades early in the draft. I mean, the Bills traded once they were way down by 28 and got out of the first round eventually entirely, but there was no move up to get a receiver. There was some movement for quarterbacks, but it wasn't as busy a first round, and maybe the talent was too can't miss in the views of the people that had the picks, and therefore the prices were too high and you just couldn't do it. That all could have happened. And then, you know, you get to, it's time to start talking about the build of the team, and someone says everybody eats, and we're just living with that. But that could be just them making the best of the situation and the hand they were dealt. I'm going to risk some futures to try to replace Stephon Diggs, but I'm not giving you all that. It's too much. So we just have to live with it. So, I mean, that's to me entirely possible. And therefore, you know, if they find their way to a guy here, whether it's the very top of the chart or it's someone more in the middle, they'll definitely just be able to say, like, you know, prices were too high in the spring, and, you know, it became time to make a move, and we did it. So they don't have to look bad necessarily, because teams say stuff all the time in the moment they're in. This is, we're happy with this. We like what we're doing. This is good for us. Oh, that guy over there is available. Yeah, we like him too. We're going to add him to our mix. Like, I don't think they have to look, foolish even. It's too strong, but there's anything wrong with them pivoting here and making a move. I mean, it's pro sports. Go make your team better.
And ultimately, that's just appearances anyway.
Right.
Really? Even if you did change your mind, you shouldn't be blamed for it. Let's go to Mark here. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Hey.
Hi. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to comment on, the Bills and the wide receiver situation. Not really the wide receiver situation, but maybe you guys can just give me an opinion. I don't expect a solution out of you today, but we watched Kansas City, who's got a similar problem in that the number one wide receiver is down and out. They go into Monday night, they scheme in three quality tight ends, and they run a relatively successful passing game. We've got what I believe to be two quality tight ends. Neither one of them are Kelsey, but good tight ends. Where's Knox? And why aren't they scheming the tight ends more in considering the predicament they're in with regards to their wide receiver situation? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think this is what should happen. Knox doesn't have to be, he's never been big targets, but what was Sunday? Were there any? And then Kincaid has to be a more impact player. The stats are showing that the Bills are not throwing the ball very much between the numbers. So there's another reason to do that, to be a little bit less predictable and more efficient on offense. So I don't want to do it because Kansas – I don't want to do anything because Kansas City did it. But, you know, that's not the only way to look at it, and I think this is what should happen.
Right. If they are having trouble getting their passing game off with three receivers on the field, because they – especially if it's without Shakir – and they don't have like a go-to guy there or an easy button play call or throw, then change up the personnel and, work the middle of the field and pass out of the two tight ends. And not that they never do that, but do it with a purpose. Do it like that's the plan. And maybe you can get an advantage there. You know, Kincaid has not gotten off yet, but from Sunday's game, you could blame the quarterback as equally as you want to blame Joe Brady or Dalton Kincaid for that. Like, he didn't catch every ball thrown to him, but the best chance he had to make an impact was a play where he beat his man down the field and Allen just didn't get it there. He underthrew it by just enough that a guy was able to make a play on it. They hit that. A, maybe they win the game. B, we're not going, we got to get Dalton Kincaid off down the field, because that would have been like a 50-yard touchdown. Like, that's getting him off down, and that was air yards too. It wasn't just a little dinky throw that he made people miss on or something. So you just got to get there. Like, the opportunity's got to meet execution. Like, there's a play where a dude you want to see have an impact had an opportunity to make an impact, and the dude we trust the most kind of blew it.
Johnny next. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
That Matt Harmon quote about having, you know, kind of drawn dead at the receiver position, that's so true. I mean, watching Mac Hollins try to track a ball down in the air was something I never want to see again. That play in the first half there, some people might say it was maybe a little overthrown, but, a decent NFL wide receiver comes up with that ball and scores a touchdown easily. I kind of want to talk a little bit about Robert Saleh and how he just got fired and kind of comparisons to Sean McDermott. Now, I know McDermott, he's taken this team to the playoffs. He's got a great winning record. And, you know, his resume speaks for itself. But they're both defensive coaches. And the Jets' defense has been top five, top 10 DVOA the last 2-3 years now. They're pretty darn good. In-game, it's really got a defensive coordinator calling the plays. You got an offensive coordinator calling the plays. And I think some of the Jets fans' frustrations have come with, like, in-game management, you know, in-game adjustments, those sorts of things. Now, this season,
are we sure about that?
Yeah, I think the Jets fans' frustrations have come because their offense looks talk about drawing dead.
I don't even notice the Jet in-game decisions because Zach Wilson has been their quarterback for 2 years.
Right, right, right. Not trying to derail you here, but I'm not sure that makes sense.
Let's hear the main point is what? McDermott should go?
No. It's the point that we have, you know, the great equalizer is the quarterback, right? So, like you said, he's had Zach Wilson at quarterback. He's had Aaron Rodgers, who's, you know, I think kind of on the downhill, and I think he's over the hill.
What's the point on McDermott, Johnny? What's the point?
It's clear. It's that McDermott can't get it done, guys.
Why did I say when I said he should go? Why did you say no? That is what you're calling to say.
I think that he can't. I don't think that he can get it done against the best teams when the situation calls.
Okay.
For. I don't think he can get it done in the playoffs.
Okay. Got it. Thanks. We don't have all day, but thanks. I mean, that's obviously where you're going. It just might have taken a lot longer. We got to speed it up. The point is, fire the coach, and you know, I wouldn't. But you're not the only person, of course.
Sure.
When is it ever like that would say that? All right. Thanks for the call, Johnny. Getting connected with the fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. 803-0550 if you want to be next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, welcome back. The Sabres home opener coming up tonight just after 7 here on WGR. Paul Hamilton will join us at 6 to set it up. Here's Denny next. Hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Today I'm calling just to defend McDermott. I'm not going to put all of this year's problems on him, mainly just because of the fact that this is really a rebuilding on the fly year. The moment that we traded Diggs away, that added up to a lot of dead cap, $30 million. What that did was it didn't allow us to fill the holes that we needed to. We didn't get the depth on defense that we're usually used to defend against the early injuries. We didn't get the separator that we needed at wide receiver in order to somewhat replace the Diggs move. So, you know, as we're rebuilding on the fly, we started off 3-0, which was better than most expected. And then obviously the last two games have been hellish for us. So I still keep the faith. This year, I don't necessarily think it's going to be our year. I don't think we plan for it to be our year. I think next year, once we have all that additional salary cap space, we're going to be sitting in a better position.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I don't know. Robert Saleh went 20-32, I think.
36.
20-36?
Yeah.
They haven't been to the playoffs since 2010. McDermott has been to the playoffs 6 times. 76-43, I have as his record. I don't mean it's not exactly apples to apples.
Yeah, I don't. I understand. Last winter, I got really hot about him, and like I'm done, and all these sort of declarative, definitive statements. So I understand the sentiment. We're all going to break at some different point in time. I have not seen anything this year that would cause me to break. Sunday. I defended him right away, and it's not just because I work here. Like I'm being honest. When I was really hot about him last winter, it was because he didn't try to win a game in regulation in Philadelphia. That set me off, and so I'm not going to criticize him for trying to do the thing I was mad about 10 months ago on Sunday in Houston, if that was even the objective. I mean, there's other things, and we've talked about it a lot. So his status is always going to be something fans are going to be discussing. But, I mean, please wake me up when you get the first inkling that he's in any trouble. He's not even had a bad year yet. He's not. They could go 7-10 this year. I don't think he's getting touched. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't be upset or call for his job. You know, you're not forced to defend him because he's the coach of the Bills and Terry Pegula likes him. But if you think something is imminent, depending on how this year goes, I'm just telling you, like, it would have to be ghastly because I just don't see it at all.
Yeah, a caller earlier said, I just don't think he'll win in the playoffs. Well, the caller's odds are pretty good. If that means if they've won playoff games 5 years in a row, obviously it means bigger than that. That's most guys are not going to do that either. So you're likely to be right. 803-0550. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog. We'll look for your call next here on WGR.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.